You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married. Well, the impeachment is over for the time being.
Until the next one.
The State of the Union has been stated.
And we've got things to talk about in regards to that.
Definitely have a few things to say about that. So I want to just kind of go back a little bit to the impeachment. That was certainly fodder for a lot of conversation, as it should be. And, of course, the vote was 51-48 and 52-47, I believe, were the two votes.
Yeah, the two different articles of impeachment.
Right. I think I have that right. Anyway, so the only defector that we had on the impeachment was, of course, on one article, was Romney.
Mitt Romney, okay. Republican senator out of Utah. And he's got a history. Okay. And the thing that bothers me about what Mitt Romney did, besides the fact that there was not a preponderance of evidence to suggest that President Trump was guilty of either of the articles of impeachment, Mitt Romney, and I know you want to talk about this, about these ridiculous politicians that don't seem to understand anything about the Bill of Rights, and specifically the Fifth Amendment. I'm not going to steal your thunder. But, you know, he wanted more witnesses and he wanted more evidence. Okay. Well, he doesn't get to decide that. That's not what he does. But anyway, here is a man, in my personal opinion, who is just a bitter former contender for the presidency. President Trump walked all over this guy. This guy has only himself to blame for President Trump's rise from businessman to president of the United States, because back in 2012, Romney had his opportunity, got stepped on by the Democrats and the media, and basically turned tail and ran away and didn't take him on like President Trump did in the 2016 election.
Exactly. He didn't fight back. And as conservatives, it made all of us pretty angry at the time. We wanted him to hit back. And he didn't. He just sat back and wanted to be the nice guy. And you know what the saying is, nice guys finish last. And that's what happened. Nobody was more surprised than Barack Obama that he won that second election.
Oh, there is no doubt. I remember, well, we were sitting there watching it together. And before everything was announced, Obama literally had tears in his eyes because he did not think he was going to make it through that night.
And he should never have made it through that
night. Oh, I totally agree.
So anyway, the impeachment went down partisan lines completely. Everything about it was partisan. But the thing that really struck me, Ron, was people that I expected. I had hoped that some Democrats would understand what a farce this was and would do the right thing and not back it. And they did not. And the one person that I was expecting to really understand what was going on was Joe Manchin.
And you know, and I agree with you, and I have to compliment you again because you wrote a wonderful article on America Out Loud, taking on Mitt Romney, taking on Joe Manchin, two different personalities,
Brad Pitt
as well. I'm sorry, but you know, you mentioned Romney.
I did.
Okay, mm-hmm. And you obviously. Half of your article was about Brad Pitt, and I want you to talk more to me about that. The other part was about Joe Manchin. But let's stay on Joe Manchin right now and talk about the differences between your feelings about Joe Manchin and your feelings about Mitt Romney.
Well, with Mitt Romney, who I'll start with, I just feel like Mitt Romney is a vengeful, sore loser. He's vindictive. He hates Trump, which is amazing to me because Trump came to his aid when he was running for senator and supported him.
And he didn't need to do that.
No, he didn't need to do that. And Romney cannot even do the same for the president. So I have to dismiss Romney out of hand because I just have no use for him. And I think that lots of people in Utah feel the same way.
Well, my feelings about Mitt Romney are this. I don't need somebody to be a team player, you know, sort of a quid pro quo. President Trump helps him out when he was running for the Senate after losing the presidency. And so now Mitt has to come and help President Trump out. I don't want that. I think there's too much of that in politics. If this is about facts and evidence, then I expect any politician that represents the United States of America and takes an oath of office to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States and also the Bill of Rights of the United States, I expect them to know something about those documents. And if there is not sufficient evidence, even in like a civil trial, okay, 51% or more, if there is not sufficient evidence, then you've got to vote to acquit. You don't say, well, the reason that I'm voting guilty is because the Republicans and President Trump didn't present us with more witnesses and more evidence. That's not the job of the Senate, Senator.
Exactly. And the thing that I was so upset with Joe Manchin, I still am, because I have not disliked him at all. He's of the other party. I think he's a reasonable man. And he's been okay to me. But what he said after he voted guilty totally surprised me. And that was that where he said, where I come from, people need to bring more witnesses and more evidence to prove their innocence. And I was just in shock because that goes against everything that we believe in this country and in the Bill of Rights, in the Fifth Amendment, that tells us that you are innocent until proven guilty, not guilty until proven innocent.
And as a matter of fact, by law, and Joe Manchin and Mitt Romney should know this, the President of the United States doesn't have to say a single word.
No.
He can sit there and let the prosecution, which is the Congress, put on their case in front of the Senate, which are the triers of fact, and then make a decision based on the presence of incriminating evidence or the lack of incriminating evidence and the presence of exculpatory evidence. And he didn't do that, which shows me a couple of things. Number one, either you're stupid and uninformed about the Constitution and specifically the Bill of Rights, okay, which is where our Fifth Amendment is found, and also, you know, our Due Process Amendment. But, you know, it's just crazy. Or you are being bullied by the Democrats to vote against the President of the United
States.
Well,
I think that that was more the case. I think that the Democrats put in it immense amount of pressure. In fact, the Democrats complained about that pressure.
Well that's what I'm talking right. about. That's what I'm referring to when I talk about bullying.
But are these people that we want to be senators, if they can so easily be bullied? I mean, they've got to stand up for what they think is right. And you can just tell that nobody did that. And, you know, it's the same thing, which I want to talk about in a minute with the State of the Union, with the women in white, which absolutely makes me crazy. But in my article, the other thing, and they just were kind of on the same couple of day time period where you had the Academy Awards, the Oscars, right?
Right.
As you call it, the spectacle.
Well, that's what it is. I mean, it's a self-aggrandizing, self-congratulatory spectacle, okay, of actors voting for actors. We don't vote for them. They vote for each other. And, you know, they're just complete train wrecks. And what you go there to is watch people that are train wrecks who are very nicely dressed, which
yes.
is part of the spectacle.
Sure.
Make political statements. And I wanted to talk with you about what you found about what Brad Pitt had to say as being disgusting.
Well, first of all, I didn't watch the Oscars. I haven't for many years. And the reason that I don't watch the Oscars is because even though I like to see the dresses, I can look at those online the next day. I don't want to see their political statements. I don't want to hear from them. They are all one and the same. They all sing the same tune. And I don't think any of them know what they're talking about, because I don't think that they live in the same world as all of us Americans sitting at our kitchen table as we are right now.
Well, they, okay? They're not. They're not of our world. They live in an insulated bubble, as you said in your article, by wealth and property and entitlement. So they don't see things the way we see things at all on the ground.
No.
Outside of the bubble.
But what Brad Pitt said, and again, I like Brad Pitt. I think he's a handsome guy. I think he's a great actor. I love most of the things I've ever seen him in. Haven't been to a movie for quite a while now, but I have really enjoyed his work. That being said, okay, from a backseat driver here, from somebody sitting in my kitchen having a cup of coffee, he's a train wreck. You know, he's somebody that cheats on the woman he's married to. He's somebody that, you know, has abused alcohol and drugs, and which the drug part is illegal, by the way. You know, so don't have a lot of respect that way for him to tell me how to think about politics. But what he said was basically, in some ways, the same thing as Joe Manchin said, which was that he thought that Trump should have had, you know, more witnesses. They should have called witnesses, and the Senate Republicans should have had witnesses called. And so he was criticizing the Senate Republicans and the president. Okay, what he doesn't understand, and what seems to be a mystery to people, which I don't get, is the rules are that the Congress does that job, not the Senate. The Congress had all of the time in the world, and
well, they had more than enough time,
and all of the authorities to issue subpoenas, to call in people, and they chose not to. You do not go into a trial and have the jury go ahead and start calling witnesses for you that were not in the, you know, pile of witnesses to start with. You don't do that. So people don't seem to understand the whole impeachment process. And when you're going to open your mouth on national television, indeed to the whole world, you ought to know what the heck you're talking about.
No, that's right. But then again, these people are not students of civics, of law, of the rule of law, about how government works, about how the Senate and the Congress work, and you know what the standards of proof are. So, and by the way, every bit of that, none of this is rocket science. It's all easily Googled. And if you went to school, like you and I went to school and took civics and took government, as we were required to do.
Well, I went to Catholic school. I had to pay attention, or well, they'd slap my hands.
Me too. And we learned a lot from that. Okay.
Yes.
Apparently, they didn't learn anything.
You know what I see? You know, just listening to you right now, it kind of crystallized something in my mind. I see that Hollywood generation as people that are feel-good people. So, and Brad Pitt is an example. So Brad Pitt thought that it felt better to go out with Angelina Jolie than to stick with his wife, or to at least divorce his wife before he started having an affair and, you know, break her heart to little pieces. So, because it felt good, okay? Then he decides, you know, that when that's not going well, he's going to do drugs and alcohol because now that can numb him and that feels good. Come on. I mean, this is the real world. We can't all just do what feels good. We have to do the right things in the real world. And you have to vote for people that do the right things. This impeachment was a farce. And it's over. But I don't think it's over. They're still talking about subpoenaing people. They're still talking about never stopping. The thing is, we just need to move on with our country.
Well, yeah, I agree. And, you know, speaking of, you know, what's going on now, now we've had the Iowa caucus, okay? And now we've got
we've had the New Hampshire primary.
And so what has happened as a result of that? Well, Joe Biden, who is the, you know, everybody has touts him to be the front runner, is no such thing. As a matter of fact, he almost placed last out of, you know, five or six candidates, you know. I mean, he didn't even, you know, get 10 points.
No.
Okay, out of the whole thing. And
he's somewhere in the eight
and
area.
And the big fight ends up being between, you know, the socialist Marxist Bernie Sanders and a guy with, like, no experience except being the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, of 100,000 people.
Well, Buttigieg. You know, he is coming off as more of a mainstream kind of guy, but he's not. He's not at all. And his inexperience is woeful. The choices that we have are woeful. And by the way, to the time that we're speaking together right now, there are 17 Democrats that have already dropped out of the race. And there are 9 left.
And they're going to fall very quickly. You know, Andrew Yang suspended his campaign.
Yes.
And also Michael Bennett just completely dropped out.
Yes.
And they're going to be falling left and right. I'll tell you who I think is going to fall rather quickly now. And that's Elizabeth Warren, because she had a dismal night, okay, in the primaries. And, you know, we were talking about impeachment and the impeachment hoax and all of that. I got to tell you, Lynn, the person that, to me, that looks like they got hurt the most by the impeachment hoax was the Democrats' front runner, Joe Biden, because it put the spotlight on him and his son Hunter and their corruption with respect to the Ukrainian government and pressuring the government and under the Obama administration, holding back money. I mean, here's the real truth. They held back the funds until the Ukrainian...
Until they fired the prosecutor.
The prosecutor. Yeah. Now, by the way, I want to say something, because tonight I watched a video of former Secretary of State John Kerry. And John Kerry, and I heard it come right out of his mouth, and it's easily Googled. You can see it yourself. John Kerry was saying that it was President Obama, Vice President Biden, himself, and a couple of other Obama administration officials that all, you know, got together to pressure the Ukrainian government to fire the prosecutor. So it wasn't just Joe Biden doing it. He was probably the spokeshole, and he's bragging about it. But Kerry was bragging that basically the Obama administration pressured the Ukrainian government to get rid of this guy.
Well, but Kerry also had, I think, his son over there, and then there was also Whitey Bulger's son.
Right.
So,
the famous
the trio
crook.
Of guys, yeah.
The monster.
So, yeah. So, agreed that, you know, they did the quid pro quo, and nobody says a word about it. How interesting is that?
Oh, absolutely.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com.
Well, we're all coffeeed up, and I want to talk a second about, you know, the candidates that are left in the race. Like I said, 17 have dropped out, and there's 9 left. I really think we're going to lose a couple more pretty darn quick here. But we still have Joe Biden, obviously. And, you know, he hasn't dropped out, and he shouldn't drop out yet. He's got to see what South Carolina and Nevada do. I think that those two are going to be really telling. And then, of course, we have Pete Buttigieg, who has come up a long way and come out to be one of the contenders with Bernie Sanders, which is scary because Bernie is a communist. So,
oh, there's no doubt about that. But, you know, it's interesting, speaking about political ideology, it's interesting to see Buttigieg and Sanders go back and forth over political ideology, and Buttigieg taking on Sanders because he's an avowed socialist. I think he's a Marxist communist, but it doesn't matter. It only matters what the American people think. But Buttigieg, to me, is sort of like the pot calling the kettle black, because Buttigieg's dad is a professor. I think he's retired now, but he was a Marxist professor teaching Marxism and Marxist ideology in the university, and he's written two or three papers on the subject. So I don't think the fruit falls very far from the tree. And, you know, I've been listening to some of the things that Buttigieg says, and it causes me pause. But the thing that I just hold against Buttigieg is he's just got just a significant lack of experience. You know, he's a mayor of a town of 100,000 people. What does he know about international trade policy, business for that matter? He's got ties to Wall Street, so I better not even hear him talking about, you know, Wall Street millionaires and billionaires, because part of his campaign was funded by Wall Street millionaires and billionaires.
Yeah, and I have no problem with that myself. But the thing is that what scares me is just exactly what James Carville came out and said, is that our front runners are both socialists, all socialists, and we don't really have a moderate Democrat in the bunch. So that really scares me. Tulsi Gabbard, her showing hasn't been good enough. She should be dropping out shortly here. Amy Klobuchar, she has had a showing, so I think that she'll stay in for a bit longer.
I think that was a shot in the arm for her.
Sure. Deval Patrick has done nothing in any race. He needs to drop out. That's Obama's friend, former governor of Massachusetts. Then we have Tom Steyer, who founded Farallon Capital Management, and he's done nothing in any race. He needs to drop out. Elizabeth Warren is really on the ledge right now. We have to see the next two races, and that's going to determine her. And that's your nine that are still in the race. So as of the moment you and I are chatting right now, you know, we have Sanders and Buttigieg, and Klobuchar probably comes in third, and then Elizabeth Warren. So that's where we stand right now.
And Biden way down at the bottom. You know, I think with regards to Biden, I want to see what happens in South Carolina. That's his best chance. Because of a large black population, and black Americans, according to the media, tend to resonate with Joe Biden. I don't know why, because Biden was part of the whole Obama administration for 8 years that did pretty much nothing for blacks. I mean, yeah, you make them feel good because there was a black president of the United States, but I think constructively and practically, they didn't do anything for black Americans.
Well, they did. They increased the race war. You know, they harmed our entire, you know, and now we're talking, every other word out of people's mouth is racist.
Put more people on food stamps than ever before.
Sure, it never was that way. Right. But I didn't mention Michael Bloomberg, which I need to mention, because Michael Bloomberg is definitely the wild card here. And when he enters the race on Super Tuesday, then we have to see what happens with him. But, you know, he got hit hard today, or I don't know if it was today, but recently he got hit hard with some of his own words.
Well, an audio from a few years ago, I think it was 2015, surfaced about his comments with regards to being supportive of stop and frisk.
Right, and he thought that they were stopping too many white guys and not enough black guys, and that you could actually just put out a memo and say, look for this kind of guy, and that's who commits most of the crimes. Well, you know, honestly,
But actually, President Trump tweeted out that he was a racist. I thought that was hilarious.
The thing is, and you can call me one, although I'm not, but But basically what he was saying at that time was correct about stop and frisk. Stop and frisk works. It's not about the color of somebody. It's about what they're doing and what their activities are and what is going on in the area at the time that you might want to stop and frisk somebody, or what the police know, because every day before they go out in the field, police have a meeting and they are told, you know, what's going on and what to look for and who to look for and where, and those, and probably not by name, although sometimes by name, but, you know, they could say, okay, in this area of 32nd and 4th, we have a whole lot of burglaries and the suspect's description is this. So those are the things and the reasons why police do that. So at the time, I agree with him. I don't agree with him now about apologizing for stop and frisk and taking it away, because that is a very useful tool for police officers.
Well, you and I, having done this for a living for forever, we know quite a bit about stop and frisk. And what the general public doesn't understand is that probable cause, and actually not even probable cause, but reasonable suspicion is the standard of proof to be able to stop and detain and possibly search somebody for the presence of weapons. But it's an objective standard, okay? It's lower than probable cause, but more than just having a basic suspicion. So you've got to see things. There has to be specific articulable facts and circumstances that lead the officer to believe that not only criminal activity might be taking place, but that the person is in possession of a weapon. Not narcotics, not contraband, but a weapon. And under Terry versus Ohio 1968, that landmark United States Supreme Court case, that's what gives officers that extremely important tool. Now, when you were talking about a meeting, you know, actually a briefing, they go through briefings every morning, every single shift gets a briefing. And they do talk about crime trends. They do talk about people that they're looking for. And they tell the officers about specific criminal activity to be on the lookout for, as well as the basic descriptions of those people that witnesses say are committing those crimes. They don't say, hey, go out there and stop every black man that you see on the street. And contrary to what a lot of these politicians, including Bloomberg, who's now, you know, walked this thing back, officers do not, I mean, the vast majority of officers do not racially profile people and stop and frisk them. They behaviorally profile people based on what they're seeing and the information that they have at the time.
But what happens is people say, okay, you get activists that say that police are just profiling them for their color, and they're so very wrong about that, but everybody else buys that argument. And so everybody now in politics, and they say, oh, well, no, this is bad and we don't want this. But they are doing such a disservice to the public. And this is why crime in some areas is going up.
That's right, because even Bloomberg, and certainly Mayor Giuliani was recently on television, and he said, and we know this because we know New York cops, and we've been to New York many times and talked to them about what's working and what's not working with regards to crime suppression. And the most important tool in the officer's tool belt is stop and frisk.
Well,
that's the most important one. It saves lives.
It saves lives, and it saves officers' lives. And right now, I mean, officers are absolutely under attack. And we just had an attack in New York where a guy...
Two attacks
by the same guy, and actually walked into a police station and started shooting. Must have been a very terrible shot, thank goodness for that, because he shot one officer in the arm.
Well, I saw it
and
on
missed
the video.
Everybody else.
And I saw it on the video. But you know, Linda, what I think is really important is when you get these politicians who just say things for political expediency and votes, they're not sincere whatsoever. But when they start talking about this, they start riling people up. And then you get that anti-police sentiment. And that's exactly what's going on in New York City right now. And then also it brings up legislation to basically sort of get rid of stop and frisk.
Yes.
Which, by the way, the officers have a constitutional right, a legal right with reasonable suspicion or probable cause to stop and detain people for the purpose of criminal activity, especially weapons violations or suspected weapons violations, and search them for the presence of weapons. And what's going on right now is I just read something where the city of Philadelphia is putting together some legislation that is going to curtail the Philadelphia Police Department officers' ability to stop and frisk people on the street. Can you imagine what's going to happen to the crime rate in Philadelphia or any other major city if that takes place?
Well, you know, as a citizen, if you are a citizen of the United States, or if you are a person that lives in the United States, whether you're a citizen or not, and in your area they say, we don't want to do stop and frisk, who are the people that live there that are going to be happy about that? It's going to be the criminals. It's not going to be the everyday American, you know, person that goes out and does their job and lives their life. They're not going to be happy about that.
Well, you know, and I talked about this issue in my book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. And I took on Southside Chicago, where the vast majority, I think over 95% of all the shootings and gun-related homicides take place in Southside Chicago, which is, you know, not a very large area of the whole city of Chicago. And, I mean, stop and frisk would greatly reduce the amount of guns on the street, and would reduce gun violence and would save people's lives. But you don't see, you know, Rahm Emanuel or any of the other politicians or civil rights leaders in the black community say, hey, stop and frisk is good as long as it's done lawfully. We want these guns off the street.
Yes.
We don't want our youth killing our youth. And, I mean, every single month the statistics come out about gun homicides in the city of Chicago, and we see that over 90% of all the people that are killed are blacks. Okay, and so my God, you know, you want to save black lives? Let's do stop and frisk with reasonable suspicion or probable cause. To me, it's not rocket science.
No, and it makes no sense what the politicians are doing. So we will see what we'll see with Bloomberg, because we don't know. And I do also want to talk about the State of the Union address.
Sure.
Which I thought was phenomenal. I thought it was uplifting and just great. And I thoroughly enjoyed watching Nancy Pelosi's face behind President Trump, and watching Mike Pence as well, because he made every effort to never look over at her and acknowledge anything that she was mumbling about or papers that she was ripping up.
You're going to talk about the pre-tear.
Well,
because I want to talk about the pre-tear.
Okay, but I want to talk about the ladies in white first.
No, go ahead.
You know, when in 2018, when we had the midterm elections, and the ladies all came in and they wore white, right?
Right.
During his State of the Union.
Well, that was some sort of anti-misogynistic statement that they were making?
It was an anti-Trump thing, I don't know. Okay. Anyway, they did the same thing. And I want to tell the ladies in white that they are completely ridiculous, and what a bunch of lemmings they are. Okay, do you not have a mind of your own, and that you need to sit there with the president and all wear white? I'm sorry, but to me, you look ridiculous. And I expect people that go into Congress or the Senate to have their own mind and their own opinion, and not be a bunch of little lemmings that are following their mother off the cliff or something.
Yeah,
which is Nancy.
Well, like Nancy or AOC, you know, the squad and people like this. You know, I grew up, as you did, during a time where there was, you may disagree with the President of the United States, but you respect the office of the
Yes.
President of the United States. And every time that we have a State of the Union meeting, that we've had one speech since Trump has been President of the United States, the extreme lack of decorum on the international stage, where people are watching what's going on all over the world, and they act as disrespectfully as they did with the President of the United States, and specifically Nancy Pelosi. You know, the whole posturing and the pre-tear, and then when the President of the United States concludes his speech, Nancy Pelosi takes each page individually and rips those pages up in a show which, to me, was an incalcitrant a four-year-old child would do something like that to make a statement on international television. Just, I was just floored by it. It was disgraceful.
I expect so much more from our leaders. And the same thing with all those women in white. I expect so much more from women. I've spent my life in jobs and in careers that are probably primarily men's careers, or have been in the past. They no longer are. But I never put myself out there as being somebody different because I was a female. And the thing is, I don't want them to do that. I think that they are downgrading women and the institution when they do that. They are a congressperson or they are a senator. They don't have to be a woman senator or a woman congressperson. They need to just be a congressperson. And that is the whole thing, is that they are making a divide where there doesn't need to be a divide.
No, you know, and I agree entirely with, and you know, after being married to you for as long as we've been married, and I get to go to the different conventions and conferences where you're making a speech or you're getting an award. And the one thing, Linda, that I just want to compliment you on is you never miss an opportunity when people say, well, you know, you broke the glass ceiling on this, and you were the first woman to do this, and you were the first woman to do that in your industry. You're always the person on stage who's very gracious, and you say, wait a minute, don't look at me like that. Look at me as just someone that made this accomplishment. I don't want to be known as the first woman to do this and the first woman to do that. And I just think that's so important, but it speaks to your independence and your sense, you know, your sense of self-confidence.
Well,
and women need to have that.
Yeah, there's only a glass ceiling if you make there be one. I never believed in it. I never saw it. I just did my thing. So anyway, ladies in white, stop it.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. To unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications. America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep, but it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Well, Linda, there's some pretty good news coming from the United States-Mexico border, and that is that border apprehensions are down again for the eighth straight month.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really excited about it because during the month of January, we had only 29,200 apprehensions. That's the lowest number of illegal border crossing apprehensions in 2 years, and compare and contrast that from just last year, where we had the migrant surge, and in 1 month We had 140,000 incursions across the United States border.
Well, I want to give you a little bit different number that I saw.
Go ahead.
Because on the Center for Immigration Studies, that you can get the figures on every single day.
And that's a very good source for information, by the way.
Right. And it's also from the Department of Homeland Security. The illegal aliens that have crossed in 2020 are 46,457. So that would include January, February at this point. Also, just as an interesting little tidbit, the cost on this day that illegal aliens have cost the country, just on this day, $698,331,000. It goes up by the moment. And the total cost so far in 2020 to all of us for illegal aliens is $35,792,373,483. That figure also continues to go up every single moment.
No kidding. Well, listen, there's a couple of things then. All right, so I'm talking 29,000 and you're talking something
46.
Like 46,000. Why do you think there is such a discrepancy between what the Department of Homeland Security is recording as opposed to this organization that tracks illegal alien border crossings?
Well, I would probably trust the Department of Homeland Security a little bit more, but don't forget that I'm also including a part of February in there. It's probably about right.
Okay, so, and I'm just speculating, but sometimes, depending on what organization is tracking illegal aliens, they are also including those aliens that are here in the United States on visa, but their visas expire, which makes them in this country illegal. Could that be part of that process?
It says that it's just who crossed in 2020. And by the way, just another little tidbit of information is that the total illegal aliens in the United States at this time is 26,915,411.
Okay.
Is the current count.
Well, I'm going to tell you my belief, and it's just speculation based on all the stuff that I've looked at. I think that's underreported. I believe that we probably have around 29 million illegal aliens in the United States, okay? And, you know, under the Obama administration, they did everything, and we talked about this before, they did everything they possibly could to not track illegal aliens coming into this country and illegal aliens committing crimes. Remember, we talked about the fact that on the FBI Unified Crime Reports, the UCRs, don't even have a code anymore as to whether people are in this country legally or illegally, because a lot of municipalities are telling their police departments, we don't want you asking whether a person is an illegal alien or not. And I believe that's part of the legislation in the state of California, okay, where that's a disciplinary offense if you ask an illegal alien or you have somebody and you suspect them of being an illegal alien if they're here in this country illegally, which is absolutely ridiculous. But anyway, so, I mean, I thought that is a wonderful demonstration of success for the wall. And, you know, you and I just came back into Texas from California, where we were out there for a couple of weeks. And, of course, we drove back in the RV with the dog. And, of course, when we go through El Paso and in parts of New Mexico, we are actually inspecting that wall and seeing all the new building of that wall. And did you notice how much new wall got built up into the hillsides of between El Paso and Juarez, Mexico?
Yeah, and a lot of the wall looks much better than it did. So that part is good. And, you know, President Obrador is cooperating much more than he was in the beginning. And he also has decided now to bring in the Mexican Marines to help with the cartels. So that is a big step, because just a short time ago, he was not willing to do that.
Well, I'm going to tell you what, as you and I both know, you know, living down in Mexico part-time, if the cartels are scared of anybody, it's the Mexican Marines. Because if you notice, every time the cartel heavyweights, the drug lords, are taken down, it's always the Mexican Marines. They are scared of no one. And it's wonderful to see them when we're in Mexico, and they're driving around in their pickups with their machine guns.
Yeah, they're very impressive. To me, I will not mess with them.
Don't want to be messing around with the Mexican Marines. But you know what? And I just don't want, you know, people that listen to our conversations to think that it's just the wall that is the success story. It is President Trump and our State Department and our Department of Homeland Security creating the legislation and the presidential directives and working with the Mexican government to tell people from not only Mexico, but Central America, right, and other countries like the Congo and all these China and all these other countries that are bringing people over here that sneak into our country, that if you get caught, it's no longer catch and release within the United States. We are going to catch you, and we are sending you home right away. We're sending you home. And that, I think, and President Obrador finally starting to come around and smell the roses, that has been the success story.
Well, he's sending people back at their southern border of Mexico,
which they really need to build up.
So they're never getting all the way up to our border.
Correct.
So that's been a huge, huge help.
Right. And you know what? If you talk with Mexicans like we do when we're down there, and we've done a couple of nice programs down in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, the Mexicans are telling their own government, we need to fortify our southern wall like the United States has done with their southern wall.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't want the people coming through either because they take their jobs as well. I read an interesting story today that I don't know if you happen to see it, but, you know, there's a woman with a couple of kids that came over illegally from Guatemala. And they're in the U.S., and she has made a complaint against our ICE that they are not treating her son, I don't remember the age of the son, he's 5 or 6 years old, for a brain or a head injury that he had. And they actually are, because these people were, I guess, stopped at some point, but they had been in the country for a month, and they were shopping, and the child, with the parents, the child fell out of a shopping cart at the store and cracked his head open. And it was not till a month later that ICE even got involved. So they wanted the child treated, which ICE did. And they're saying that he's not being treated well. Well, this is a story to me of somebody who wants to sue or is being encouraged to lie about this, because they did all these tests and nothing comes back as being wrong with the child. And the child, when they interview the child, so the parent says that they have headaches, he has headaches, and he can't speak properly, and he's got all these issues. And the child doesn't present with any of that nor complain about it when interviewed alone. So really, really interesting little story, and how they manipulate the system, I'm sure with the help of some creative attorney.
Well, I think you're right there, and we do see a lot of that. A lot of times these illegal aliens are used as pawns in a political or an economic game, like plaintiff attorneys will do from time to time. Anyway, switching it up, I wanted to talk about the four United States attorney prosecutors that just withdrew from their posts as U.S. attorneys in protest over the United States Department of Justice Administration's decision, which is actually an extraordinary step, of overruling the sentencing recommendations on Roger Stone, who was, if you remember, convicted of obstruction, and he was President Trump's former advisor. Remember, he's 67 years old.
Yeah.
Well, these four attorneys, in their sentencing recommendations, they wanted him to go to prison for between 7 and 8 years. 7 or 8 years when you're 67 years old for a nonviolent obstruction of justice charge. Well, if you remember, Linda, for, you know, from being on the job, once a person is convicted, and Roger Stone was convicted, there are sentence recommendations that are done, and in this case, it would be by federal probation. Now, the federal prosecutors can certainly make a recommendation of sentencing. As a matter of fact, they're sort of expected to. But then what happens is that the sentencing is recommendations are sent to a United States probation officer, federal probation officer, like one of our buddies, Ron Scheidt. He lives out in Nebraska. And they're saying, okay, well, you have to do sentencing recommendations and present your second your sentencing recommendations to a judge. Well, in this particular case, these attorneys had all uniformly had said, no, this is a very serious offense, and we think he ought to do 7 or 8 years. The administration completely disagreed and said this was way over sentencing and way outside of the federal guidelines for sentencing, which was something I think between 8 and 15 months. So you went from 8 to 15 months, which is just a little bit over 2 years, to 7 to 8 years in prison, in a federal prison. When the guy is 67 years old, it's almost a death sentence.
Yeah, I read some different numbers on that as far as the years. I read up to 12 years, so I don't know what's right and what's not right. But I'm good with them resigning. That's fine with me. I think President Trump may end up pardoning him anyway at some point. But this really is going to be up to the judge in this case, who is not a big fan of Roger Stone.
Right. But, you know, the judge also has to go in accordance with the guidelines. So I just thought that was really interesting. And I agree. If the U.S. attorneys who were the prosecutors in the Roger Stone case decide that they don't like what their own administration, meaning not President Trump, but the Department of Justice, their own bosses said, well, then find something else to do for a living.
Well, and, you know, again, this goes back to me to the hypocrisy of all of this with these people that, like Flynn and Roger Stone and people that are related to Trump, where you did nothing to Comey, to Hillary.
Well, what happened to all those people in Fast and Furious?
Yeah, to all those
nothing.
People. So you know, I just have no sympathy for any of them because I just think that they're all hypocrites. Well, President Trump is getting a little payback right now, or giving a little payback on the impeachment, in that he's getting rid of some of the people that testified against him that he felt were really out of line, like
Vinman.
Yeah, right.
Lieutenant
I forget
Colonel.
His, Lieutenant
right.
Colonel.
Yeah.
Okay.
From,
yeah, and his twin brother.
And his twin brother, yeah. From the National Security, you know, Council.
Right. So they're not fired per se.
No, he's moving them. They both got transferred out of the White House. They're going to go back in the Pentagon. We don't know what assignments they're going to have yet. They're lieutenant colonels, so it's going to be some sort of administrative assignment. And then also, you know, we just finished talking about the four U.S. attorney prosecutors in the Roger Stone case. Well,
right.
The U.S. attorney that headed up the investigation and the prosecution, her name is Jessie Liu, and President Trump's people had previously nominated her as the new head of the United States Treasury, and President Trump just nixed that because he found out that not only was she in charge of the investigation and prosecution of Roger Stone, but also Michael Flynn. And you know what's going on with Michael Flynn right now. He's put in for a change in plea, and the judge that's reviewing that case has decided to indefinitely suspend sentencing.
Oh, wow.
On that right now, because they want to take a look at how that case was handled. And there's been a lot of talk, I mean, in official circles, that he was unfairly prosecuted.
So I always thought he was unfairly,
you know,
prosecuted.
And that he was forced into taking a guilty plea, and they set him up in a perjury trap, you know,
right.
The FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office. So,
And then we have the European envoy.
What was his name? Sondland?
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 Yeah, I think so.
Right.
He has been recalled. And so these are three people that, you know, had things against Trump, and Trump is, you know, starting to pay people back. And I'm happy to see that, because, you know, these are people that would stay working against Trump in his administration, and you can't have that.
Well, you know, I said when President Trump first came into office, get rid of those people that were from the Obama administration that are pro-Obama people, because all they're going to do is strike out against you and try to hurt you. And people, you know, don't remember that when President Obama came in, speaking of ambassadors,
right,
he fired every single ambassador that President Bush had selected for that office.
Yeah, all at once.
Every single one. And I believe, I'm not confirmed, I can certainly find out, but I believe that he caused U.S. attorneys under the Bush administration en masse to resign. Everybody was told, put in your letter of resignation, and we'll see if we accept it or not. But they pretty much accepted pretty much everybody's letter of resignation. So there are consequences in politics, and this just happens to be one of them. I'm 100% in favor of what President Trump is doing. Everybody's got to be rowing in the same direction, right?
Yes,
and when people are not rowing in the same direction, like especially Lieutenant Colonel Vidman, who bragged about being an activist in the military, which is disgraceful because the President of the United States is your commander in chief, then I say get rid of all those people.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that there's a few more heads that are going to roll.